This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. It's Wednesday, the 5th of March. I'm Alec Hogg. Welcome to the BizNews briefing. Top story tonight picks up on the World Bank report that was issued earlier this week, saying that South Africa needs to urgently reassess its BEE laws. Gabriel Krauss at the Institute for Race Relations, the top think tank in South Africa, it's been doing this kind of work for almost 100 years now, says that it's a 150 billion rand a year cost to the economy. Some would say a scam, given that the beneficiaries are not broad-based, but a tiny elite, and not all black, by the way. And his view is that if this money were to be channeled back into the economy, if the cost were to be taken away from society, and indeed this is directly in our taxes, VAT, instead of having to be increased to 17%, could be cut to 11.5%. Let's pick up on some of the highlights of this morning's interview, which is in full on BizNews TV.
So, Acting Chief Procurement Officer of Treasury, who presides over about 1.2 trillion rand of spending, Willie Mathebula, has explained repeatedly that a BEE premium is the legal amount that the government can spend extra in order to procure from a racially preferred buyer. So to give an example from the City of Cape Town's Value for Money report, two suppliers were willing to sell traffic light controllers for about 70,000 Rand. There's the original manufacturer, and then there's another supplier selling exactly the same part, exactly the same deal. But the original manufacturer didn't have as many BEE points, so they didn't get the contract, the tender. The supplier that did get the tender sold exactly the same thing for 7,000 Rand extra, for 7% extra. I think it was about 6,000 Rand extra. So that is a BEE premium of about 7%. Mr. Mathebula has explained that BEE premiums are capped at 25% for contracts under 50 million Rand, and they're capped at 11.1% for contracts over 50 million Rand. So if you've got a 100 million Rand contract legally, you can spend an extra 11.1 million rand for exactly the same building, exactly the same length of road, exactly the same part for a power station. You can spend that extra 11.1 million rand legally in order to go to the company with the higher BEE points. And that's actually legally required unless Treasury gives an exemption.
How much of South Africa's state spending is actually subjected to this 25% rule up to 50 million or 11% over that?
So the short answer is just about all of the public procurement spend, which is roughly 1.2 trillion rand per annum at this stage. And that is about 15, 17% of GDP. So it's about a sixth, between a seventh and a sixth of the economy. So you can think of it as one day of the week. I would very much like all South Africans to be respected in the basic way required by the Constitution, which is, you know, we pay taxes and Treasury has a duty to tell us how those taxes are being spent. So the first thing is there should be transparency about this. And the people not calling for transparency are also in the opposition. Then the second thing is to call for a reduction of BEE premiums down to zero rand. And our polling indicates, polling by the Institute of Race Relations, who asked this very specific question last year, and we found 70% of all respondents, similar numbers across races, 65% of black respondents, said they would like BEE premiums to come down to zero rand. Our report estimates that the BEE per annum savings that we could garner is 150 billion rand, and conservatively, 100 billion of that could go to cutting VAT to 11.5% from 15%. Which would directly inject money into the economy, stimulate demand. It wouldn't add to the debt because it would be paid for by cutting the premiums. It would be very welcome relief, or poverty relief for the bottom income group who would not suffer so much VAT. The exemptions don't really work. And it would stimulate, you know, business activity, because there'd be an extra 100 billion rand instead of the government spending it in a way that adds nothing to the economy.
If you just take it one step further, and we didn't discuss this today because the focus here was on the amount that is being, as you said, the BEE premium that is being added to the economy. You can imagine it's like a millstone around the economy's neck. But there's a lot of complaints about the lack of investment into South Africa. Well, are you surprised? If you would like to invest in a new business or a new company, you must have BEE partnerships. These are people from all over the world who we desperately need to come into our country to create jobs. But they've got to give away between 25 and 30% of that business. So effectively, if you're going to put in 100 million rand, well, just know that you're going to write off up to 30 million rand of that immediately. And your net investment is only going to be 70 million rand. Now, nobody in their right mind is going to do that. They just aren't. MK's a stunt, some have been calling it, to press treason charges against the AfriForum and the Solidarity guys who went to the United States to put more attention on the 142 race laws that exist in South Africa that most of the world would have imagined would have gone out with apartheid in 1994. Well, that has shaken up within the Government of National Unity exactly how South Africa as a government should be handling its foreign affairs and its foreign policies. It has left a lot to be desired lately, and the Brenthurst Foundation described Cyril Ramaphosa's doubling down on his fight with Donald Trump and the United States as someone who is continuing to make up foreign policy as he goes along, playing a game of chicken mounted on a moped against a freight train. Chris Steyn spoke to the DA spokesman, Willie Ocomp, to find out how long the Democratic Alliance is going to remain in a subservient position when the ANC continues along its old-fashioned and clearly misguided foreign affairs policies.
We are now in a government of national unity. It is absolutely extremely difficult to handle things because everybody's got to learn how to trust each other, how to not have all the power you used to have, and in a certain sense to now have power that you've never had. And in that scenario, we've got to find each other. But things like international policy are one of those things that the ANC must realize that they do not govern alone anymore. And if they want this government of national unity to work, they must come into this GNU boots and all and allow their partners to also have their say, our say, in things like foreign policy. And that is the main reason. So for the ANC to try and deflect from this, I think is disingenuous. The main reason are the ineptness of ANC governments in the past.
Realistically speaking, what are the chances of this GNU being able to change foreign policy to the point that it would appease the US? You used the word allow. The ANC would allow its partners. Does that mean that the DA is at the mercy of the African National Congress to decide whether they will change foreign policy or not?
Maybe allow was the wrong word to use. It's definitely not allow. It's accept. They must accept the fact that we are there. If you look at clause 19 of the statement of intent, it clearly talks about sufficient consensus of all issues. And you cannot isolate foreign affairs and international relations and say, sufficient consensus, but not on this. This we will keep apart. It's not how it's going to work. And the Democratic Alliance will definitely not accept that. So it's a matter of they must realize that they've got to work together. I think we saw that, Chris, in the budget. You remember that Bella, the Expropriation Act, and the NHI were all three acts that were passed in the previous parliament when the ANC still had a majority. What we saw on the 19th of February when Minister Enof Godongwana did not deliver his budget speech was the first time that this government of national unity, after the elections, had something on the table that they collectively had to agree upon. And the Democratic Alliance just said, we do not agree with a 2% VAT increase. And our leader, John Steenhuisen, made it very clear that we will not support that. To such an extent that the Speaker of Parliament had to postpone that meeting. I think that was a very good realization for the ANC, and reality struck them that day to realize that maybe the previous stuff that was voted through the previous parliament, they could have steamrolled over. And from the Democratic Alliance side, we tried our utmost best to get those acts in such a way that it is the best that we could have done. But now from here on onwards, the ANC will require us, and we made it clear to them that they must come with policies that will be to the benefit of this country and its people. Otherwise, we will not support them.
Well, they've got a big test coming up with BEE, given that the World Bank, the IMF, Harvard, the Zondo Commission, and the IRR have been banging on this drum for such a long time. Remember, BEE rules in South Africa benefit a very small percentage of the population. It's an elite, and not all of them are black people. As far as the strategy of economic growth is concerned, well, we have not grown in real terms. In GDP per capita terms, which is each one's share of the economy, since 2007. Time to have a look at those underlying issues urgently. Black unemployment, black people in 2007, there were 6 million unemployed. There are now 11 million. Donald Trump is trying to get his whole story together as well. And yesterday, he delivered his first major speech since his inauguration just over 6 weeks ago. At 100 minutes, it was the longest presidential address to Congress in modern American history. Trump focused on tariffs, government efficiency, immigration, border security, and his opposition to the woke standard of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. Here's the opening part.
6 weeks ago, I stood beneath the dome of this Capitol and proclaimed the dawn of the golden age of America. From that moment on, it has been nothing but swift and unrelenting action to usher in the greatest and most successful era in the history of our country. We have accomplished more in 43 days than most administrations accomplished in 4 years or 8 years, and we are just getting started. I return to this chamber tonight to report that America's momentum is back, our spirit is back, our pride is back, our confidence is back, and the American dream is surging bigger and better than ever before. The American dream is unstoppable, and our country is on the verge of a comeback the likes of which the world has never witnessed and perhaps will never witness again. There's never been anything like it. The presidential election of November 5th was a mandate like has not been seen in many decades. We won all 7 swing states, giving us an electoral college victory of 312 votes.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At SunExchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Yeah, he's not the man for the understatement, is he? Well, just before the address by Donald Trump, Vladimir Zelensky, the president of Ukraine issued a statement on his own behalf regretting what happened in the White House last Friday. And in that 100-minute address, Trump said that Zelensky had written him a letter to say they would really like to proceed under Trump's leadership. Let's pick up on the Zelensky side.
We do have some breaking news here. We're hearing from Ukrainian President Zelensky saying that the first stages could be a prisoner release, a truce in the sky. Interesting here when you think about the tension, the heated exchange that we saw in the Oval Office.
Absolutely.
I think
the most important point is that he's ready to work fast to end the war. He's ready to work quickly to end the war, I think is what he means there. And that's a direct answer to Donald Trump's plea for peace. So he does say he's ready to take those steps if Russia does the same. And we know that this administration has a very close relationship with the Russian administration and Vladimir Putin. So maybe they'll be able to work that out. Zelensky saying that the way that he regrets the way that the White House meeting turned out, or that it was regrettable.
Right.
I'm not sure if this is going to be seen as a full apology, but that's something that, of course, the Trump administration is going to want to see. They want an apology, and they want, a sure aim that he is ready to make peace.
Yes.
Now, the question is, does that mean giving up ceding all of the lands that the Russians have taken in this war?
Yeah, and these do echo his comments that, of course, he would be willing to come back to the U.S. if that offer was extended, if we're talking about serious talks here. So a lot of words. I'm not sure, again, to your point, the Trump administration wants an apology here, and it doesn't seem like these comments get all the way there. But
keep in mind, the Trump administration has cut off aid to Ukraine. So the U.S. is no longer going to be financing, at least for now, the independence of this country against the Russian aggressor.
Well, perhaps there is going to be movement on that side as well, given that Trump said last night that he had received a letter. On to markets now, and there's two sides to every argument, and indeed there is one now about American stock prices. Well, let's hear first from Kathy Wood. She's from ARK. She is focused on innovation and the technology area, and she explained in a engagement with our partners at Bloomberg how artificial intelligence is such a good thing that it's boosting productivity and is going to add a huge amount of value to the value of companies, particularly, listen carefully to the end, Tesla and its robo-taxi initiatives.
Productivity has been boosted to some extent, and you're right, it's very difficult to measure this. My background's economics, and in the 80s, productivity was a big question mark, and we saw how flawed the measurements are and probably still are. So I can only tell you the rate of uptake is so much is that enterprises are seeing a difference. Maybe if they're not laying people off, they're not hiring them.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that, and that's because these AI tools are making their own, especially engineers, so much more productive, right? So you just don't have to hire that next person. If you've seen the number of coding employees in the United States has dropped like a cliff. I mean, off a cliff. It hasn't dropped like a cliff. It's dropped off a cliff. And I don't know if you've seen that chart. So that very much has happened as engineers just become more and more productive. You know, one of the things that we're wondering is, okay, what part of the software stack will this, the traditional software stack, will this impact? And we think the AI revolution is what we see already losing share to some extent. It is still growing, but losing share is software as a service. And, you know, I think we're all paying very close attention to the revenue growth dynamics of these companies. A Salesforce.com, revenue growth isn't picking up. In fact, it continues to decelerate. I think it's next quarter will be, I think, 7% down from 9%. That's not what's supposed to happen here. And so I think that might be what you're referring to. Wait a minute, where are the top line dynamics? Where are they coming from? Well, I think we have a lot of entrepreneurs in a lot of garages or in R&D centers who are creating the next big thing. And, you know, we look at two profound ramifications of AI that we understand. We've been researching them for so long. The largest AI project on Earth is robotaxis, autonomous driving networks. We think that's going to drive $8 to $10 trillion in revenue globally in the next 5 to 10 years, up from zero now.
And you can understand why she's such a big bull on Tesla. It's her biggest holding and has done terribly well for them. But you got the other side of the coin, and the bears are looking more and more to a gent by the name of Jeremy Grantham, who has been arguing that US stocks will fall by half, 50%. He spoke to Merin Somerset Webb in her podcast, Merin's Money. That's for Bloomberg.
I've always looked at it from the point of view that the longer and the bigger and the higher it goes, the more exciting and dangerous it will be. And this has moved up the rank of super bubbles, but it's nowhere near Japan, the mother and father of all super bubbles in 89. And it's nowhere near their real estate bubble of the same era. They're the two great super bubbles of history. But a decent way behind, I think, this is in third place, ahead of 1929, just, and ahead of December 2021, which actually met all the characteristics of a late-stage super bubble, and one really should have expected it to blow up. And it did. 22 was a good blow up across a lot of asset classes. But AI, ChatGPT, came to the rescue in November of 22, and initially for 10 months, dragged by the Mag 7 and the rest of the market going down a little bit. That kept going for about a year. And then in October, November of 23, the market said, this looks serious, we better join in. And the breadth became positive and had a perfectly decent 24. And the net result is that every measure of traditional value, the best of the common ones being Shiller PE, is at a record. And most of the ordinary ones are in the top 1 or 2%. And the best one of all, which is a variant of total market cap to total value added in the economy, that has this one the highest of any in history.
That's the Buffett measure, right?
And it's a variant. If you take out financials and you tweak this and you tweak that, Hussman has a good variant of that. And they make it clear that this has overtaken 29 and 2021 and moved into first place on the American record, still way behind Japan. And then Ben Inker at GMO and I, 25 years ago, did a behavioral model which says, forget all the logic about the efficient market or how it should work and dividend discount models and all that. Just let's see what actually explains. And what has explained since 1925, and explained very well indeed, is low inflation. The market loves it. High inflation it hates. High profit margins, of course, the market loves it. Growth rate has no correlation at all, but stability of GDP growth, the market likes. And that's way in third place. So the things that make a portfolio manager feel comfortable, that's what decides what the PE will be. And even on that model that had a nearly perfect record, the market could drop 50% to get back to the normal response of flaky human beings. The normal behavioral responses would have this market at a perfectly respectable 18 PE on Shiller, and it's actually just over twice. It's 37.
Jeremy Grantham, the super bear, and warning there, waving a flag to say that the market could drop by 50% to get back to normal levels, as he puts it, and that the stock market in America is today worse or more overvalued than it was in 1929. And anyone who's been following anything about economics will recall the 1929 crash, which ushered in the Great Depression in the United States, something that we've all heard and learnt about. Here in South Africa, our depression was just as bad in that period in the early 1930s. Well, that's it for today, and Bronwyn will be back with you tomorrow with the briefing. From me, until the next time, cheerio. This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.